welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Nittis, and later in the episode, I'll be joined by Aaron Flores, my co-host, and Adele, my lady friend. Before that, we've got an interview with Ted Bueller, who does deconstruction by bike and is an expert at figuring out how to move large cargo loads completely by human power. So excited to share that with you. After that, we've got Aaron and Adele talking ice cream and Pedalpalooza rides. We'll share some mail from listeners. And at the very end of the episode, The Path Less Pedaled, their rewards song. It was the Indiegogo campaign that we hosted last fall, and we've got that song done. So that's two down, one to go. And I think there's a couple more rewards that are still outstanding. I appreciate everybody's patience with that, of course. We are going to be wrapping that all up soon. I think we've got some man-on-the-street interviews that I need to get out for Logan. We've got some spandex to put on for Steve in Wyoming. And I think there's a few more out there, but I'll make sure that we get all that wrapped up before, of course, we get to the end of the year. In the meantime, please enjoy this episode of the Sprocket Podcast, and we will see you soon. So again, first up, here is Ted Bueller talking about deconstruction by bike. So we are in the room with Ted Bueller. Is it Bueller?
Yes.
Okay. Sometimes I have a hard time with pronunciation, so I want to make sure that I do you justice.
Okay.
A name is such a personal thing. Ted Bueller from Deconstruction by Bike and many other things in Portland. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming in.
You bet. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so we are enjoying, I already forgot the brewery. We're enjoying a red ale that Aaron picked out from the store.
Angry Kitty.
Coalition.
That's it. Coalition is doing some good stuff. Have you had their other beers?
No, I don't think so.
They have a really good stout. I think it's called the Hanso, which is, it's really just, you know, thick and chocolatey like a stout should be. And yeah, it's one of my favorites, so. They do all right. And they haven't been around that long, but they've kind of made some waves. Like, they've started making beer pretty pretty quickly and well. So,
with cats, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No cats were harmed in the brewing of this beverage. So, Ted, you we were just talking about you moving here from Minneapolis, I believe.
Originally from Minneapolis, that's correct.
Yeah, so you moved to Oregon, and you've been doing some very interesting things by bike. Things that perhaps people said could not be done.
Probably. I think you're correct on that one. No, nobody ever told me that they couldn't be done.
Right, right.
They may have known I wouldn't have been a receptive audience.
Right, right, right. So this deconstruction by bike is something that's been happening for a while, and you've been involved with that.
Move by bike has been going on for a while.
Okay.
And deconstruction by bike is a new thing.
Okay. I guess new within the past 6 months?
6 months.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because I remember hearing about it, and we were just talking about, I met you. You were signing people up. You were enlisting people with trailers to carry heavy things.
That's right.
And that was at Steph's Bike Move.
Yep, that was February, I think.
That's Steph Rao
or something.
Yeah. And there, what was that, 60, 70 riders? I'm trying to remember the number.
There were a lot. There were a lot of riders there.
Yeah. And so many riders, in fact, that there wasn't cargo enough to go around for everyone.
Yeah, see, so that's the nice thing about the deconstruction bike move.
Right, there's always enough to go around.
There's always enough cargo.
So, let's talk about bike move experiences, because you've done some of that.
Right, so I moved to Portland a while back, 5 years or so, and I've always been a fan of hauling things by bike. And up until I moved here, I would always haul things on baskets and racks and stuff like that and just drag them around, lug them around, balance everything high. But after I got here, I started going to the Move by Bikes, and you know that's the pretty phenomenal event. It's where somebody's moving house, and they just get all their friends over, and the friends bring bike trailers and bikes with baskets and backpacks and whatnot, and everybody just piles stuff on and hauls it across town.
Yeah, and the idea being that you can get it all done in one shot, as opposed to having to make like 3 or 4 or 8 loads or something like that.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's a couple advantages. The one is you don't need to have a car to haul it.
Right.
The other is you just need to buy some beer and pizza, and then all your friends will do the work for you.
So there's a cost involved, but it's also it's quite worth it.
Yeah. The cost is always a grocery store bill. So
right, right.
Or wherever you get your food.
And some folks have had kegs. I remember Steph's move had an enormous keg.
Yeah. I actually don't drink that much beer, so
right.
Kegs don't always register with me, but trailers do.
Seriously, and you can haul a keg on a trailer.
Yeah, you can probably haul several.
I think one of our, was it Rance, I think, it wrote in and said he had been doing that, loading a keg into a trailer.
Listener from Terre Haute, Indiana.
I was impressed on the move that we were on together. Just the idea that many people moving stuff, it does happen all in one shot.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
You don't have to make several trips across town. And I'm sure, like, they had to go back and, like, turn in the keys and probably pick up a few spare ends or whatever. But the bulk of the stuff was transported in one haul. So have you ever been a part of a move where you did have to make more than one trip, or is that unlikely?
I don't think I have. I actually haven't attended that many bike moves. I mean, I've attended a lot, but I haven't attended a lot. Certainly my bike move, we made multiple trips. But
okay.
I have a lot of junk, and that was just 1 mile. So.
Sure, sure.
So that was sort of planned that way.
Yeah, and 1 mile, that's you can kind of traverse that a couple times.
Yeah, that wasn't much trouble.
Yeah. I forget, were you at Ryan Good's bike move?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, because I remember showing up for that one. That was another time where, like, I think I carried 2 lamps and that was all.
Yeah.
There were enough people showing up that there was just, we got it all packed away.
Yeah, for a lot of these bike moves, especially if the person moving has been involved in bike moves for a while and they have a lot of friends, you have to get there early if you want to load up your trailer. Otherwise, you get there late and you just grab a box, or you look around the backyard and try to find some crap to throw in your trailer.
Exactly.
That they might not even want it.
I carried muffins in my belly, I think, for that one, mostly. So what you've been doing recently with the deconstruction by bike, this is a similar thing to a bike move, but instead of someone's possessions, it's the actual house?
Oh, that's right. We moved a house.
Yeah. So where did the idea come from?
Well, I bought a trailer 3 years ago so I could renovate a house here in Portland. I bought a house that needed a whole pile of work, and so I decided I'd do as much as I could by bike instead of by station wagon. And so I bought a 6-foot-long bike trailer from Bound Bikes.
Okay.
6 feet long, 3 feet wide, made out of bamboo, and I just started hauling stuff.
Yeah, the bamboo trailers are made here in town, aren't they?
Yep.
Is that Adam George?
Adam George makes the bamboo trailers.
Yeah, he had an interview on the KBOO bike show, I think, 6 months ago or something. Yep. But yeah, it's fascinating because the bamboo is a natural substance, so you don't have to shape it much.
Right.
Tie it together, shellac it down, you've got yourself a sturdy trailer.
Yep.
It grows fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's very sturdy, yes.
Totally.
Biodegradable too, in the end.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, so you could have some sort of funeral pyre or something if it ever breaks beyond repair.
Yeah, I think it's gonna last a long time. I've really put mine through the ringer in 3 years and it's still holding up just fine. So.
Yeah, that's impressive.
So there's this place here in Portland called the Rebuilding Center.
Right.
And, oh yeah.
And it's a nonprofit
in North Portland.
Yep.
Yeah.
North Portland, and it's just like Home Depot, but everything is salvaged. Like everything is in stock. You can pretty much find whatever you want to. Sometimes it's not going to be the right color or the right pattern. Sometimes it's going to need a little more scraping and painting than you really wanted. But it's all there, and it's just this fabulous place.
Yeah.
There's lots of Habitat Restores around this country. There's the chain, but I've never gone into a Habitat Restore and said, whoa, cool stuff. I just walk in and say, whoa, there's a lot of stuff that was bought at Home Depot, used for a couple of years, and then dumped off here.
Right.
And so it really wasn't a quality product to begin with. But the great thing about the Rebuilding Center is that, one, they're in Portland, where there's lots of old bony houses, with all sorts of stuff that's still in good shape, like lumber and light fixtures. But the other is that they specialize in salvaging whole houses. Like if a developer is going to tear down a building, going to tear down a house and build something fancy there, the Rebuilding Center will bid to take the house down for them. Board by board, window by window, light fixture by light fixture. They take out the plumbing, they take out the light fixtures, and then they just start at the roof and work their way down. It is called deconstruction. And it's by far the most environmentally friendly way to take down a building because everything
now
gets reused.
They're intentionally using the term deconstruction versus demolition.
Oh, yes, that's right. It is not demolition. Demolition is where you got the bulldozer and you go kawam and the whole thing turns into splinters. Deconstruction is where you got a whole crew of people in there making a modest wage and learning how to pull out nails and stuff like that, and they take the whole thing down and they load it on their flatbed truck, and then they haul it across town to their warehouse where they sell it.
So this is kind of an analogy to the move by bike in that it's a bunch of people taking a big task and breaking it into bite-sized pieces?
Yeah. So normally they do it on a flatbed truck. But since I made a point of hauling everything by bike from my house, and also since I happen to only live a half mile away from the rebuilding center, they got to know me pretty well, you know, and I would throw on a fridge, I'd throw on a bunch of rolls of marmoleum, I'd stack on some Powell's bookshelves that they got donated 6 feet high and ride off into the sunset and stuff like that. You know, and I didn't try to make a scene, but it's kind of hard not to make a scene when you're riding off for that sort of thing.
The scene occurs naturally.
Yeah. So one of their missions is to do green business, and so they said, hey, you know, we have these two houses that are just 2 miles away. I wonder if we could move these things by bike. So the next time I was in the store, they said, hey, Ted, we want to talk to you. And they said, we have a house. We want to move by bike. I'm like, cool, done. We'll do it. I'm like, really? You think so? I was like, yeah.
Nice. So were you saying this confidently as though you'd already like figured out how you would do it all? Or were you still kind of scrambling in your head like, yes, we'll do it. And I'm going to figure out some way, somehow to do it.
Somewhere in between.
Okay.
The conversation may not have gone down quite that way. But
yeah.
But that was the essence of it. You know, because I mean, I knew about seven people that had bamboo trailers just like mine, and about seven other people that had other heavy haul trailers. And whenever you go to a move like Steph and Ed's, and there's, you know, 50 people there hauling their trailers around, and everybody's, you know, fighting over the last lamp because they don't want to look silly riding down the street with an empty trailer. It's like, I figured, you know, we got plenty of community volunteers out there that would love to, you know, to pile a whole stack of 2x4s on their trailer and
seriously
go riding down the street. So I said, sure, let's do it. So they proceeded to take down this house. There were two houses there actually, and then we set up one weekend with, I guess, a follow-up weekend. So on the first weekend, you know, we had about a dozen people there, but they'd actually gotten slowed down by the rain taking down the house. You know, like deconstruction is sort of a slow, gradual process, and they don't like to leave a whole bunch of stuff on the site. You know, they don't want to take down a house and just leave it in a pile on the front lawn.
Right.
You know, so they'd actually hauled away part of the house a week earlier, but then they couldn't take down the whole next section. So we got about 12 people there, and we all loaded up our trailers and did two or three runs, and all of a sudden the site was clean again. So
there we go.
You know, we were a little disappointed that they didn't have a full 4 hours worth of work, but they promised us that we could come back the next Sunday and do it again.
Perfect. So did I'm just trying to think of like the way that this goes down. You say like it's being disassembled in pieces or segments, that sort of thing.
Yeah. You know, so like, you know, we're sitting around just for you folks at home, we're sitting in a nice garden apartment here. If I look, I see this very nice oak hardwood floor. I see some original 1950s windows. I see a popcorn ceiling that might have asbestos, might not. I see some crown molding on the top. I see some nice light fixtures. There's a kitchen sink. There's a toilet. And then behind all this, there's lumber, lots of lumber. And so they just send somebody up on the roof, and they just take everything down. And then in the end, you have a big pile of lumber in the front yard. And like up front, you have all the kitchen sinks and stuff, but we didn't get the haul at that time, but
But next time.
Next time they're going to save the kitchen sink for us.
So
basically, you know, there was a stack of about 40 pieces of 4x8 foot plywood that were the roof sheathing, and then there were a whole bunch of roof joists that were about, you know, 2x12, 2x14, and about 14, 15 feet long.
Those are some big pieces.
Big pieces. And then there was lots and lots of 2x4s and lots of miscellaneous stuff. So we just loaded it all up. And of course, the trick is hauling something that's 14 foot long on your 6 foot trailer because.
Right. That was going to be one of my questions.
Yeah. So. So we rigged up a way to get a tandem trailer going, and somebody taught it to me a long time ago. I don't remember who it was, and I'd done it a couple of times when I had to haul 20-foot boards from my house. And the key is, you just make your front trailer. You know, you just imagine a semi driving down the road, and it has a thing called a fifth wheel, and like the fifth wheel is like a horizontal wheel that the trailer sits on. So it can spin around, you know.
Okay.
You
know,
so you think I would have known that by now? That's the first time I've ever understood why it was a fifth wheel.
Yeah, I had to Google it. I didn't know either. So
yeah.
So you put a milk crate on the middle of your main bike trailer, and you tie it down really good.
Okay.
And then you set your boards on top of that milk crate, and then you bundle the boards together really good, and then you just tie the boards kind of loosely to your milk crate with a bicycle inner tube. kind of tightly, kind of loosely.
Okay.
So that they're going to stay on there when you turn, but there will be enough give in the inner tubes.
They'll also turn.
They'll turn.
Yeah, you'll have a pivot point there.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Exactly. You have a pivot point. And then you get another trailer, and then you tie the back trailer onto the back end of the load. So you have two trailers.
Fascinating.
One in front, one in back. And so the bike pulls the trailer in front, and the load is attached to the trailer in front, and then the load is also attached to the trailer in back.
And there's wheels under all of these pieces that kind of help it glide along down
yep.
the street. Yeah.
Yep. So it took a little bit of fine-tuning to get that to work well, but after we got it to work well, you know, we were just rolling. The second week was when we had the infinite amount of lumber to haul, and so we were just rolling up, you know, loading up these tandem trailers and riding them back down Mississippi Avenue and, you know, smiling and waving at everybody going by.
Yeah.
You know, Mississippi Avenue is a busy, busy commercial street with a lot of restaurants and stuff like that. And it was downhill most of the way, so we could make it look like we weren't working very hard at all.
This is easy.
Totally, yeah.
The longest load I carried was 26 feet.
Okay.
And
wow.
There were a lot of 20-foot loads, and one of the real champion pieces was a big beam that went from the front to the back of this house, and it was like 2x6s glued together, so it was like 6 inches wide, 24 inches tall, and 22 feet long.
Wow.
So it was roughly a 600-pound beam, and they just... And there were these two people on a tandem bike that pulled it, but they just had the same two trailer set up, and... rolled it down the street.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you all are gods among men, yeah. I would say. This is this is impressive. What was the response like from people? Like you said, like it was friendly, there was waves, that sort of thing. Were people, do you think people comprehended what was happening?
I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Because it's kind of all passing like one piece at a time, basically.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they could tell something was going on. I bet very few people figured out that we were moving a house that day. So
right, yeah. Right. But, yeah, most people see the
pieces. And,
not
the whole.
Exactly.
So much.
But I think it was really good to have a parade because like I'm always carrying around one load on my trailer, you know, and like people can't quite tell if I'm some crazy nut or if this is, you know, the most difficult thing in the world to do and I'm just kind of managing it or whatever. But when you got 10 people rolling down the street one after the other, then people can see that, you know. You know, it's a fairly practical sort of thing to do, and it doesn't
right.
take too much specialized equipment or knowledge or anything like that. It's the sort of thing that can be.
Well, that's the cool thing
taught
that,
and shared.
Yeah, but you're using just standard bicycle trailers, right? I mean, these are things that
for
are
all
not,
intents and purposes, yeah.
Yeah, they are heavy duty trailers.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're rated for 600 pounds. These bamboo trailers.
Okay.
You know, so you can haul pianos and fridges and stoves and all that good stuff on them. So
sure.
And we were probably just hauling, you know, 200 or 300-pound loads on the average, just because if you take a 600-pound load, it's really so tedious and you have to go so slow that it's almost, you know, it doesn't take too much more time just to take 200 or 300-pound loads and kind of have a good time of it. So.
For sure, yeah. And when you're dealing with just basic physics, right? Like the idea that if you put an object in motion that at some point... It'll want to keep going, and you won't.
Trying to stop would really burn out your brakes. I'd imagine.
Yeah, all those things are correct. The laws of physics are 100% applicable to hauling 600-pound stuff around on your bike trailer. So, both the good ones and the bad ones.
Right, right. So, would it be appropriate to ask about? Have there been any mishaps, or has it been fairly safe?
I think we had a perfect safety record. I don't think any. I mean, people might have scratched their finger on nails or something. But,
sure. Yeah, but that's a cosmetic problem, not necessarily a health problem.
That's correct.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating.
A few other things on the deconstruction is we're hoping to do it again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if any of you folks out there in, you know, Wi-Fi land or whatever want to get involved, we have a Facebook page called Deconstruction by Bike.
Right.
Oh,
yeah,
cool.
And we'll put a link to that.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yep. You know, nothing fancy. Nothing much, but the rebuilding center says that the next time that they have a house that's within 5 miles of their warehouse that they're taken down, that they're going to call us back.
And yeah.
We were a little disappointed that we didn't get to move the whole house this time, that they'd actually, you know, taken two truckloads or so before we started, and also we only had a 4-hour window to move. And so there was still about 2 hours worth of stuff left to move in the end. So we're hoping to do a 100% deconstruction by bike, which means that we'll have to get more people out there. So if any of you listening have a hankering to be involved in this sort of thing, we're looking for people to help.
There we go.
Because you don't have to have a trailer. You just have to be willing to go and help.
So I was going to ask about this. Yeah, can people bring their own trailers, or are you?
It's all people's personal trailers.
Sure.
There's no official sponsorship by anybody. Right. So, but so if like you have a bike, you can bring it. You can put wood in your backpack and haul it off, or you can balance it on your rack or whatever. And like other people with trailers, sometimes have tandem bikes that they want somebody else to help ride.
Okay.
And then if you have a little trailer, then you can pair up with somebody else that has a little trailer, and then you can both haul the 20-foot stuff on your two trailers combined. So you don't have to have one of these heavy haul trailers to go out and have a good time.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, and you can probably set someone up with the milk crate fifth wheel.
Yes. The milk crate and inner tube fifth wheel.
Yeah. It's probably not that difficult to do with anything that someone would be bringing.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, some little kiddie trailers might be awkward because they have high sides or something.
But, that's true. Yeah. Yeah. That is. I've seen kiddie trailers repurposed for various uses.
Okay,
and they've been useful for the purpose. But you're talking about this is more of a flatbed thing if you're hauling lumber or whatnot.
Yep.
So is the lumber, I'm just curious about like the condition. Do you know if the lumber
like
is largely reclaimable? Yeah.
Oh, is it? It's all reclaimable. If you go into the rebuilding center warehouse, you just kind of walk in there. It's on Mississippi Street, just north of Fremont.
Uh-huh.
And you walk in there, and they have 2x4s and 2x6s and 2x8s and 2x12s all in a row. And like you pay more for the high-grade stuff and less for the low-grade stuff. And basically just take down a house and denail it and stack it up there, and it's gone in a couple of days because everybody wants, or not everybody, some people go to Home Depot, but everybody would like to have good, solid, old-growth wood instead of the,
good point.
You know, the fat-grained tree farm wood that you get at Home Depot. So.
Yeah, and that is a difference, right? Because there are fewer old-growth forests in general in the world at this point.
Yeah, certainly true.
Most of the good quality wood has been mined.
Yep.
So, I never thought about that. That makes a lot of sense. I suppose also the wood that frames the house is covered up with all the other things that go around it. So, generally, unless you have water damage or something, you're going to have everything you need. It's going to be pretty well protected.
Yeah. You know, I mean, sitting here in this lovely 1950s garden apartment living room, I bet if Aaron was to thump the wall over there,
as he is now doing.
Give it a good whack. Yeah, you know, pretty solid back there.
Yeah,
it's good
stuff.
It's
true.
You know, and like if somebody wanted to build condos here, they could either send in the bulldozers and bulldoze it flat, or they could send in the deconstruction crew and take all these great 2x4s and haul them off and resell them. So.
Right. And I'm in favor of the second option.
Oh, yeah.
That seems like a good idea.
Yeah.
Are there ways to carry larger items on baskets and racks that are practical? Or?
I've been hauling stuff on my bike for my whole adult life, and it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that I broke down and bought a huge trailer. So back before then, there were sort of two things that I would use. One would be a rack that would have the built-in side baskets on it. So you have about an 18-inch wide basket and back, and then you can haul lumber and stuff on there. There's all sorts of ways of hauling lumber on your bike. You know, you can tie it to your frame and run it between your legs, or you can tie it on your rack crosswise. I guess those are really the two main ways of doing it.
Right.
Like there's a few tricks of the trade, and it's kind of hard to describe without having a sheet of cardboard and a Sharpie to make some diagrams.
But need some visuals.
But like, if you want to haul something wide on a narrow rack on your bike, you want to take inner tubes or bungee cords or something and tie sort of at 45-degree angles from your rear axle up to the 2x4 in question. You know, suppose you just imagine an 8-foot 2x4 sitting sideways across your bike rack, and like whenever you go around a corner or something, the thing is going to tilt and drag on the ground and stuff like that. So the key is to have tension in your inner tube or like bungee cord sort of at a 45 degree from your axle up on one side at 45 degrees and then from the other side of the axle up on 45 degrees the other way and then tie it on really good. And then when it wants to tilt, it's not going to be able to tilt very far because you tied that inner tube on super tight.
Sure.
So
Yeah, it's kind of a stabilizing sort of thing.
Yeah. And then you could also build some sort of a semi-permanent rack out of an oven rack or something like that, and tie it on with inner tubes so you didn't have to always tie it on and untie it. But that's just one of the tricks of the trade for like hauling big stuff on your bike without actually paying the time and money and having the storage space for a trailer. So
true enough, and most people have an oven rack in their oven. So.
You're right. You could temporarily repurpose your oven rack with a couple old bicycle inner tubes, and then make it into a fairly sturdy cargo rack. I never thought of that one. That's a good one.
I guess it depends on how much you use your oven, because like if you're baking every day, it's probably a
well that's a good point. But yeah.
You would run afoul of your wife.
I probably would.
I mean, other people have ovens too. You could just borrow their oven racks.
That's true. Not everyone uses their oven. I bet that I have neighbors right here that someone has a spare oven rack.
People with microwaves.
Yeah, or you can go to the rebuilding center and buy yourself an oven rack.
There we go. Well,
for like a dollar. Yeah. And you're not going to offend anybody.
This is a win-win-win situation.
Yeah, so the other thing is those baskets. You know, the baskets always look kind of janky if you have them on a bike, especially if you're in a city like Portland where everybody rides pretty bikes and fancy bikes. But,
right.
But they're actually really functional. You know, the built-in one piece, two basket setup, and you can get them for like $25 or something. And
this is like a basket on either side of the wheel.
Yes, that's right. Yep, and one piece is. They're made by a company called Wald, which is just an old. I think they might even be made in America. Operation.
Yeah, and those go way back. They've been around for a while.
Yeah. Like people in the '60s when they went to college, they'd carry their school books and those things before they, became less stylish and stuff like that. So I've had one of those for a couple of years too. I used to live in Davis, California, which used to be the bicycle capital of America. You know, it's
a long time ago or whatever.
There's a UC campus there.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's a UC campus. And like everybody there kind of rode these retro bikes, and so everybody had these double-sided baskets. And that was pretty cool. But so I would always haul big stuff around in that, but I never built myself a trailer in Davis either, but trailers are plainly the way to go because you can take them on, you can take them off, and you can make a really big trailer. So
yeah, and semi trucks have been around probably for that reason, just the fact that it's very practical.
Oh, that's right.
It's efficient and it works well for moving large loads of things. So also, I just realized I think we have listener Patrick in Davis, or just outside Davis. So hi, Patrick. We love your city.
Hey, Patrick.
So. As far as putting stuff onto a bike, we've talked about trailers, we've talked about racks. Are there any other methods that...
I could tell you a little more about trailers. There's definitely more to say about trailers. So
totally.
I confess that until recently, I hadn't actually tried to make a trailer myself.
Uh-huh.
And I was actually a little disappointed to find out how easy it was, because it's not really all that hard. And I could have been making a trailer and carried it around for the last, 10 or 20 years, because you can make yourself a trailer and it's not really all that complicated. The deal is that if you want to have a lightweight trailer that'll last for forever and can be easily taken on and off your bike and is sort of idiot proof, then you want to go with a fancy trailer. And like fancy trailers run $600 to $1,000, which like seems like a lot of money. But on the other hand, I mean, my little Toyota station wagon stayed parked a lot for the last 3 years when me and my bike trailer would go off and do stuff. And,
poor station wagon. It was lonely.
Well, I'd know, but, like the fuel pump lasted an extra year or something.
Exactly.
So the key is I actually made myself a trailer for the first time about a month ago. And this trailer that I bought from Adam George, I was perpetually dissatisfied because I wanted to haul 4x8 sheets of plywood and sheetrock on it, and it just wasn't designed for that sort of thing. And and Adam would freely point out that most people don't want to haul 4x8 sheets of sheetrock, and they want a trailer that's actually small enough to fit through doorways, so they can bring it in the house.
Right.
And so I just went out and built myself a trailer out of scrap lumber, basically. And then I got an extra axle from Adam George and just put it on there. So between the wheels, the tires, and the axle, it was about $120 for that. But
okay. And this is a double axle trailer then?
Single axle trailer.
Oh, a single axle. Okay.
Single axle trailer. And I made it so that the bed was 10 feet long instead of 6 feet long. And I also made it so that the bed stuck up an inch above the wheels so I could load things that were wider than 3 feet on it.
There we go. And that's the problem I've had with the big trailer I have access to, is that there are no wheel wells. So, big items are hard to load. Carry.
Yep. So, I mean, on my Bound Bikes trailer, I'd often thought about building a little rail around there or something, but that all seemed a little impractical. But on this trailer I made myself, I just put the wheel, I just jacked up the bed on top of the axle.
Okay.
And
did you need like some sort of shocks or springs?
No,
on that,
no. You just kind of ride slow and try to find smooth streets. And then for the hitch, I just configured away using wire and inner tubes to make a hitch. And I made it so it couldn't be taken off. That was part of the catch.
So it was kind of a permanent installation sort of thing?
Yeah. I was working on a house that I owned, and I was there for 3 weeks. And I really didn't want to drive my car to Home Depot every day. I really wanted to take a bike trailer because, I mean, if you're not having fun, then you're not having as much fun, and you're not getting as much enjoyment out of working and all that sort of thing. And I wanted to be able to ride my bike every day instead of sit in my car every day. So it was just 2 miles to Home Depot from that house, and I knew I was going to have to buy some 12-foot sheetrock. So I made the trailer bed long enough to haul 12-foot sheetrock, and sure enough, it worked out just fine. So I think that there's unexplored avenues in the world of trailer building that people have not, really poked around much on.
Uh-huh.
Even here in Portland, Oregon, where like the Move by Bike program has been, the tradition has been going on for pushing 10 years now, if not more.
Right.
And where there's, at least one professional trailer builder in town. I think that there's lots of ways out there that people can get involved in moving their own things by bike and making their own trailers and stuff. And I plan to make a couple more trailers just for fun, just to show that it can be done.
Just to show that you can do it, yeah.
And so that I'll have my own personal 10-foot trailer here in Portland so I can haul long stuff without having to put milk crates on my trailer and all that.
What about, I'm just thinking about weight distribution because I've had problems with improperly loaded trailers before.
Yeah, so that was the other thing that I didn't figure out until a year or two after I'd bought my trailer is that I just had Adam make me an extra axle, and then I could stick that axle on wherever I wanted to.
Interesting.
And so when I was carrying long loads, I would take my wheels off the front axle and I'd put them on the back axle.
Uh-huh.
Ah.
So then I could call, I had a 6-foot bed, and if the wheels were at the very back of it, then I could haul 11-foot lumber with it still being balanced, and I could probably haul 12-foot lumber if I just put some weight in the front.
Right.
So that's another trick that I don't think Adam had ever thought about that because I've been complaining to him for like many months about the lack of ability to haul 4x sheets of plywood on that trailer. And, and then all of a sudden, hey, wait, I can do this. It's not that hard. So that's the key to weight distribution.
Okay.
You just need to get yourself another axle for that trailer and you need to tie it on, So if you're hauling something super heavy, you want the axle way up front. And if you're hauling something super long, you want the axle all the way in back.
There we go. Yeah. And one of our listeners, Steve in Montana, when I was doing the bike move, mentioned that his golden ratio is like 60-40, something like that. Like 60% of the weight on ahead of the axle and 40% behind, I believe.
So when I made my trailer just homemade, I would always load that trailer a perfect 50-50 because I didn't want any weight on my bungee corded hitch,
Right. And depending on your hitch mechanism,
tube and baling wire.
Yeah, that makes it probably you want to kind of protect that a little bit and keep as much of the balance over the axle of the trailer as possible.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah. How does the hitch work? It's just being tied down basically.
The hitch that I made or hitches generally?
Well, the hitch that you made, I was thinking of, but there's a lot of options with hitches too. So.
Yeah. Like the first big trailer that I had access to in this town was a roommate named Aaron Tarfman, and he had two big aluminum schleppers, and they hung on the seat post, and I like that. The thing that annoys me about trailer hitches is when you're riding down the road with a heavy load, and you get this harmonic motion of some sort where every second the trailer pushes and pulls that.
So, kind of a herky-jerky sort of
motion.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased that my baling wire and inner tube hitch did not have that motion at all.
Is that right?
And like I don't know quite what all the properties that I designed into it, like there was a bike ride at 9 o'clock and I finished this trailer around 8:30 and I was like, what do I have to tie this thing on? I wanted to use a scrap of car tire.
Okay.
But there were no scraps of car tire to be found. So I just grabbed some 12 gauge three wire Romex, you know, which is standard household copper wiring. Cause there was some of that lying around and I grabbed an inner tube and I tied it on and, you want the, you know, I had the pivot point on the left axle of my rear wheel. And then the properties are that you would want to have a huge amount of play in there and a huge amount of stability. Like you want to be able to do a U-turn in an alleyway so you can bend that thing to the left better than 90 degrees.
There we go.
And you also want to have 90 degrees pivot in it at least one way so you can lie down your bike on the ground and not always have to have it leaning up against a tree or something like that. Because
that makes sense, yeah.
Because if you're loading a huge amount of weight on your trailer and if your bike's just sitting there leaning against a tree, if you inadvertently put an extra 50 pounds on the back end of the trailer when you're loading it, it's going to pop your bike up and your bike's going to fall down anyhow. So
yeah, right. And I've had that happen before. So yeah.
So you have to design in the flexibility. So I basically hung the, you know, I have a rack on my bike, so I had the rear stay and then I had the you know, the aluminum vertical post on the rack, and I just wrapped the inner tube and the copper wire around that vertical stay, and then I tied them both to the hitch tongue, and then I tied them to the bottom part of the rear stay, and I was really pleased that it worked well, and I took some pictures. So hopefully if I do it again and it doesn't work, I can go back to my pictures and
see where the design flaw might
be. And then I'll have a better answer for you guys with exactly what has to be done. But yeah. If anybody wants to try it, you know, don't give up until you have it figured out. That's all I have to say.
Perfect, yeah. Right on. Well, there's nothing more custom than baling wire. Like, you can really put that around in exactly the shape you want it to be.
Yep.
And if you use enough of it, it's pretty firm and stable, I would imagine. So,
that's right. Yep.
Yeah. Do you have, just while we're talking about hitches, are there any designs that you don't care for? You mentioned the seat post attachment is difficult.
I always really like the seat post attachment because there was less jerky motion. But Aaron Tarfman now tells me that he's no longer doing that. He doesn't think it's a good idea. He thinks that the Adam George method of having a little compression hose fitting onto the rear axle, that's Adam's standard way, and it's also the Bike Friday standard way, and it makes it very easy to get on and off. But it's never really all that sturdy or...
Like whether or not it feels good when you're using it.
Yeah. You know, there's always a little bit of play in there. So so it's just you really want to have, you know, plenty of play pivoting both horizontally and vertically, but zero play front to back. That's probably the parameter of a very good hitch.
So. There we go. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. It allows you to kind of maintain the momentum of your cargo and the momentum of you at the kind of about the same rate, just so it everything holds together. Well, cool. Is there anything else coming up event-wise? You mentioned there are thoughts about doing deconstruction in the future, but
hopefully there will be another deconstruction move. Well, I mean, I'm sure there will be someday. I just hope it's sometime soon so we can get the tradition going, because also there's lots of houses near the rebuilding center that just get bulldozed flat, and like if there was a tradition of hauling houses within 3 miles of their warehouse by bike, then the developers might opt to have the house deconstructed just so they could get the green points and, you know, use it in their marketing and stuff like that and the cool factor. So
yeah, it's worth some in marketing, that's for sure.
Yeah,
it helps to get some momentum behind that too. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you do that, the more momentum you're going to have behind each one.
Yeah, but I did have some other heavy haul ideas. I mean, like, I was hauling some sheetrock a couple of months ago, and I thought maybe I just need to get 10 friends over here and each haul 4 sheets apiece, you know, just to get it to my house to put it up. But I ended up just having one friend, and he and I just each did a load, and it was a little easier than I thought. So
that is heavy stuff. Sheetrock is pretty dense.
Oh, yeah. It's not called rock.
For no reason.
Sheetrock for no reason. So if any of you out there in Wi-Fi land know people that are doing heavy moves, like these bike moves where people move their house by bike, you know, all of their possessions, it's a lot of fun, but most people don't have enough weight to really get everybody loaded down and really demonstrate the capability of what a group of people on bikes with trailers can do. So if any of you have any good ideas of something, you know, heavy and bulky that has to be moved, you know, 1 to 10 miles would be a fine target, hopefully without too many hills, you know, like 40,000 pounds of stuff.
There we go.
It would just be good times. So, you know, and like if you want to buy us beer, you can find a group of people that want to haul it.
It's not a bad idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, again, it's Deconstruction by Bike. It's a Facebook group. We'll have the link on our website. And Ted Buehler, thank you for telling us a little bit about Cargo.
You bet. My pleasure.
Good luck in the future.
Thanks.
All right. Now we go to the conversation in progress with Adele and Aaron. And when my microphone works, I'm in there too. This was our conversation about ice cream, local restaurants, and Pedalpalooza rides that we have been on. We start with Aaron and Adele discussing the ice cream ride that Aaron had taken part in.
I only went to two places.
Well, because I see frozen yogurt as you see salt and straw. Like, just the caving in, everything that's wrong with our cultures. I like the frozen yogurt when I ate it. But
here's the thing, and actually I think the Willamette Week had it right when they reviewed salt and straw the way they did. Because ice cream, I mean, it's a treat, but it's a kid thing. It, at least here in America, it's, you know, growing up and chasing down the ice cream truck and getting your dreamsicle. It's birthday parties in the summer. It's pool parties. You know, that actually is what ice cream brings to me. And salt and straw is like the antithesis of that. You know, it's all of these, for lack of a better word, adult flavors, you know.
I don't remember seeing kids there. And then it's kind of late at night when I went.
Maybe so. But I think people like bring their kids there. I've seen kids outside of there.
This is a trend that's happening with food in many different genres. Like the hamburger is becoming elitist. And ice cream is becoming elitist, and maybe elitist is the wrong word, but just becoming more frou-frou and fancy, more gussied up. So hamburgers should just be this like relaxing backyard barbecue thing, but now it's becoming this like very, it's like you have to seek the best hamburger in town, like it's the Holy Grail or something. And there's definitely not kids. There's definitely not kids eating in those hamburger joints. And they're definitely,
except when the parents bring them, and then they're like all pissed off because they can't just get a regular hamburger or
if a burger's gonna cost more than like $8, then I don't know, maybe you're missing the point of a hamburger.
And you're listening to the Sprocket Podcast.
Simplifying the good life. We should just eat regular hamburgers.
Where did you go
Simple
for
hamburgers.
Ice cream?
Okay, so the ride started in Woodstock. So we went to Cloud City, which specializes in handmade. They make their own ice cream right
there.
Is it
a new place in Woodstock?
It's been around for about a year now. It used to be another joint that only served Umpqua ice cream, which is cool. Like, they were Umpqua only, which is cool. But now these guys took over the shop, and they make all of their ice cream right there in house.
Was it so good?
It was really good. I had just a regular vanilla. It was bourbon vanilla. And you could really the bourbon would come through. I don't think so. I mean,
it's like cooking with liquor.
Yeah, I mean, I actually seek out bourbon vanilla for all of my desserts.
If I were paired, I might really give my child sugar and bourbon at the same time, because it would kind of equalize out the sugar rush and then sedate them at the same time. It might be a great idea.
Right. Well, bourbon vanilla is, I don't think actually has bourbon.
No, you know what
it
is? I think it's the way that they make the vanilla extract, because I was reading this today, how to make your own vanilla extract. You can soak vanilla pods in either vodka or bourbon.
Oh,
and
okay,
bourbon
then
gives it a richer flavor. So it's just a way of drawing out the essential elements of a vanilla bean is putting it in bourbon for a couple of months.
Okay.
So it's not actually like spiking the ice cream with a lot of bourbon, I guess.
I'm still in
disappointing.
The clear.
Well, yeah, because you wouldn't be able to have it. There was a lot of bourbon in
right
there.
Allah would be angry with me. Allah just being an Arabic name for God.
You have a contract.
And not me making fun of anyone's religion.
Of course.
Right. No, I don't drink because I choose not to.
Right.
It's not
a contract with Allah. It's a contract with you.
Right. It's a contract with myself, which one could maybe extend that elsewhere into a supernatural contract. Anyhow, the second ride, or the second place we went to for ice cream was, Scoops is the name of the joint. It's a handmade ice cream food cart. Nice. They have one on 50th and Division, but that's not where we went. We were like somewhere near MLK and Washington or Stark, around there. There's a cart pod there. Looks like it's just starting up. There's just a few carts there.
Was there a pyro pizza champion there?
No.
No. Okay.
No, that's no. It's so not.
It wasn't.
It's not Cartopia.
No, I know, but there's another one that has both of those.
Really?
That's in kind of near the river, near MLK.
Huh.
Yeah. It might have been.
No, there was no potato champion or. Okay. Or,
there's just so many food cart pods there. Now.
Yeah. I think they're just starting up because there's very few, and none of them were open except for one. It was a bento joint.
Huh.
It was somewhat early. It was before the lunch hour, so to speak.
What kind of ice cream did you have there?
So there I ended up with, good question. I can't remember. Oh, it was, no, you go to hell.
You can only get that at Salt and Straw.
Right, like they've got a patent on caramel and salt. It was oatmeal and brown sugar.
Nice.
Yeah, it was cool. And there was like actual oatmeal in there. Like, so it had this texture along with it, which I'm kind of a texture person these days. I was actually debating. I'm almost afraid to admit this, but I was actually debating before leaving to fill a Ziploc bag full of hemp protein so I could add that texture to
so you
my.
You can chew your ice cream.
Yes, I like texture with my ice cream.
It's not real food. I bet you could chew ice cream at Salt and Straw.
Yeah. You've been doing hemp protein since the Crater Lake trip, right?
I would say probably shortly before. I didn't do it for the Crater Lake trip, but...
I was going to say you turned me on to it, but I don't think I've really... I don't really...
It hasn't taken...
The way that you do, so...
Oh, you know what? Speaking of hemp, apparently a couple weeks ago was Hemp Appreciation Week, and yeah. New Seasons, like anything that had hemp in it, like they seriously marked down. And I happened to be there
a couple weeks ago.
I happened to be there.
What was the most?
Yeah, maybe it was.
What was the most unusual product that was made out of hemp? Do you remember?
Well, I wasn't like looking for anything. Happened to be there during Hemp Appreciation
Week.
Hemp
milk, hemp seed, hemp clothing.
And I bought some Dr. Bronner's, both just regular soap, and they now make a shaving cream. So I bought those and. I saw the marking, like the original price on there, and when the lady went to ring them up, it was significantly less. And I actually was asking her about it. Oh yeah, Dr. Bronner's.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So
can almost
eat
it.
Got
That's
a good
only
deal.
Thing you can't
and
do.
Had I known, I would have totally stocked up on hemp protein. I would have said, "Wait, lady."
If Dr. Bronner's is
hemp oil. Along with other essential oils like peppermint oil and
well, because you can do everything
it's
else
not
with Dr. Bronner's.
Toxic. It's gonna clean you out though. It's a soap. It's rendered fat.
Yeah.
Ooh.
If I don't want an enema, I could just swallow Bronner's.
Conceivably.
Okay.
Dr. Bronner's company, write to us please before Brock poisons himself. I use it as toothpaste.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when we're camping.
I think you'd have to get the mint flavor for it to be cool as toothpaste.
Well,
because lavender sounds kind of gross.
Yeah, yeah. And I only use the mint. And you also have to dilute it. Like, just like if you've got the liquid, just a drop on an already wet toothbrush or like wet your toothbrush and like just barely brush it up against the bar of soap.
Because that stuff like foams up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Does it leave a weird aftertaste in your mouth?
Not so bad. The before or during taste is probably the worst. But because it is a soap. And it tastes, it's got, like, as powerful as that mint is, which is nice, it tastes like soap.
I want the bubblegum flavored.
There you go. Does Dr. Bronner's have a bubblegum flavor?
Hey, I went on a ride. I went for the Sweat for Sweets ride yesterday.
Yeah, tell me about that. Because cool, I missed that.
Really sweat. It was a really slow paced ride.
Boo.
I think it was done. Well, it was done with children in mind. So it was like.
Oh, I mean, good.
But it was also. Well, my old housemate Candace wanted to meet up on that ride.
Right.
And so she waited for us in Gresham, which turned out to be like waiting in Gresham for an hour and a half before we actually arrived. So, yeah,
That was something else.
Uh-oh. I don't think... Are you coming through?
Are you recording?
Maybe. We'll find out.
Oh, yeah, it's lighting up.
Yeah, but the way that things worked out, like, I think I spent like 4 hours on the ride.
Where was the chocolate fountain?
The chocolate fountain is in Gresham. It's 181st and San Rafael.
And you can't, there's a sign there that says, please don't drink from the chocolate.
Please don't drink from the chocolate
fountain.
What
can you do with the chocolate fountain?
You can look at it in awe.
That's awe? What?
Have you ever seen that much chocolate?
Same
what
chocolate
a disgusting
that's been
waste of resources.
This is what I used to say when I worked at a deli. I was like, you know, sometimes I just, like, liberally apply cream cheese to bagels because I want to, like, you know, look how much cream cheese we have. Look, you know, am I not benevolent or whatever? You know, and so
I think that's kind of the idea. They just want to say, hey, look,
we've got all this chocolate.
I guess once you, you know, up front put up all that chocolate, you could just keep it circulating through the fountain for dozens of years.
I think maybe.
And that's probably why they don't want you to eat it. Or maybe it's not really chocolate and they don't want you to discover that. It just looks like chocolate, but it's really like molten plastic.
There's only so many things on this planet that can pass for chocolate.
It's just wax. So, okay. Anyways, I did that. I also, it wasn't a pedal polluter ride.
It is coming unplugged, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. It wasn't a pedal polluter ride, but I did ride my bike to Vancouver for a bachelor party. Ended up taking a cab back downtown to downtown Portland, and then taking a cab back to Vancouver, at which point I slept over and then rode my bike back today. So that was cool. I was the only one doing that.
You were on a pedal-palooza ride of one.
And today, you and I did the Get Lost ride, which was kind of, it was a shame because people would ask us, like, what ride is this? And we'd be like, Get Lost, which was funny.
Fuck you, too.
But no, it was led by Amos Hunter and the famous Get Lost ride every year. Simply, you have a pair of dice. We roll them. And odd number is left for that many blocks. Even number is right turn for that many blocks. Doubles is straight ahead for that many blocks.
That was
what I realized is you could end up biking on a road that's really not good for cycling, like 82nd or Powell Boulevard.
And we did.
You or
did.
A railroad.
Wow.
Right down by the Brooklyn Yard. Yeah, we went down a technical dead end. And
we didn't actually go across or down the railroad.
No, no. But, Union Pacific employees were right there. So.
It doesn't really count as a road at that. Well, it's a railroad.
That's true.
But your bikes.
That's true. Yeah. So that was a good time. And it ended at Roadside Attraction, which is my personal favorite pub.
Yeah.
So another shout out to listener Max, who you saw at the ice cream ride.
Ice cream ride. Listener Max. Listener Sarah. New listener Brian. And
shout out
many
to
other listeners, I'm sure.
Michael, who recognized my voice. This is becoming a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So if you're out riding bikes in Portland, just eventually you'll hear me talking and then you'll know who I am. So good times.
I thought his introduction to you was one of the most creative.
Was it? Yeah, that's right.
It could have been really creepy, except to, like, the way he presented it made it sound so much funnier.
Don't you enjoy the simpler life?
So your name's Brock, right? Yes. Do you by chance enjoy the simpler things? Like, and then he, like, pretty much verbatim says our intro piece.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah.
Food, technology.
Yeah, it was great.
Random acts of God.
So if he ends up getting enough time in his work day to actually listen to us again, hi, Michael.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before that, Saturday did the Yeti ride.
Oh, yeah.
The Yeti hunt. I've got the cool spoke card.
Spoke cards for rides. I think this is a good idea.
Yes,
I think
definitely.
Anyone leading a ride
should Petalpalooza make, people
yeah, make
your
make spoke cards.
Make your spoke cards. They're awesome.
Because I've never had any before this.
This is my only one.
Now I feel cool. It's like I'm in a club.
Yeah, and that was fun. Like I got to see things I thought were interesting, but never went into, like ADX, which stands for Art Design Portland.
Oh,
or Art Design PDX.
I've never been there,
and it's like this sort of giant warehouse of woodworking stuff and metal shop stuff and just all sorts of fabricating things. Mo, the furniture company, Mo, I believe is what they are. Kind of high-end designer furniture work out of there.
Nice.
And yeah, it was just really cool. The guy like gave us a tour, but there was also like this kind of hip-hop concert going on there too.
So they're a really cool furniture company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very, very cool. I mean, the guy who gave us the tour had spacers, you know.
Well,
so
that's cool. That in itself.
No, they were really cool.
And you found the Yeti.
And we did find a Yeti at Beulah Land, yes.
Naturally.
And we all crowded into the photo booth there and took our picture, and of course the
grainy photo.
Yeah, it was all grainy and poor quality, so no substantive proof the Yeti exists still.
Well, we can all keep hoping.
It ended at the IPRC, who was also having their 15th birthday. Happy birthday, IPRC.
Yeah, fine distributor of independently published material.
Yeah.
Words in print.
So 15th anniversary or 15th birthday, and they had a 15-foot cake.
That's pretty good.
It was a lot of cake. I tried to do the whole like panorama thing that the iPod has, and my hands were not steady enough. Like, oh, so
okay, there was just too much cake.
I've got a picture of a cake that like looks like dominoes stacked on top of each other.
If I had a cake, that's what I would want. Hey, we've got some mail.
We got mails.
Let me read this.
Here, I'll sign off while you.
Okay.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks
about
for hanging out, Adels. Thanks for goading me into an argument about salt and straw.
The Sprocket Podcast.
Out hustling. Everybody else.
You've got mail.
Will Vanloo shares the BTA's blueprint for better bicycle infrastructure is complete. So we have a link up to that. They've got high hopes, and hopefully many of those will become reality someday. Renee, I assume, from Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. He says, one day I will visit Portland and participate in some of the awesome cycling-related activities you talk about in your show. Meanwhile, here's a link to an article your listeners might like. It's a bicycle barometer, which tells you whether you should take bike or transit based on various data sources, weather, transit information, etc. I constantly check the weather for the next day's commute into work. Not difficult, but it's sometimes a pain. The barometer does all the work for you. Really cool.
Second coolest app ever.
Yeah, totally.
First coolest being Fruit Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Canada, tomorrow, Monday, which, so this is going out. So last week, anyways, Monday the 17th, there is a Velopalooza ride, which is our neighbors to the north.
That's right, Vancouver,
that's their
Canada.
Version of Petalpalooza.
Totally.
And so there's a bunch of people, I guess, from Vancouver, Canada, hanging out down here, and they will be doing a big Canadian-themed ride.
Nice. So, I love Canadians.
Yeah, me too. I've got quite the affection towards our neighbors to the north.
Totally.
Not just because I talk like one.
And he says it. That's great.
So anyways, Renee, come on down. We would love to have you.
Seriously. And Wayne finally donates and says, keep up the good work. So thank you, Wayne. And if you also enjoy the Sprocket Podcast, you can send us some money and keep the wheels greased. So,
or send us, you know, drinks or
bacon.
Other swag, you know.
Well, actually not bacon for you. Bacon for me.
Yeah. Fakin. That stuff's gross, though, actually. Don't send me fake meat.
Seriously.
Send me, like, something fresh.
All right. Well, hey, that's a good way to wrap it up.
There goes the mail. Headlines?
Nah.
No headlines.
All right, folks. And lastly, this is the song written about and for The Path Less Pedaled. That's Russ Rocha and Laura Crawford. Find them at pathlesspedaled.com.
Hope you enjoy it, and we will see you on next week's show. Take care.
Two sets of tires grinding down a gravel lane. Lovely weather gives a feeling that you can't explain. Cooking dinner by firelight. Hear the sounds of the woods at night now. Grabbing coffee at a country store. In the morning gonna ride some more down the path less pedaled. The path less pedaled. The path less pedaled. And it's feeling good. On the river's edge, metal smithing a custom head badge. Cross the country on a passenger train, pitching camp in the pouring rain. Fight evil with a folding frame. A lot of miles still left. On the path less pedaled. The path less pedaled. The path less pedaled. And it's feeling good.
Podcast is independently produced in Portland, Oregon. Every week, find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us feedback for the program, suggestions for topics, guests, or drinks, and write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call us, leave us a message, or text us at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast, or find us on Facebook. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music. He is on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Have a good week. We'll see you later.
So you're gonna have to like do the reading, like I.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I was. I'm sorry. I was waiting for the. I was waiting for a clean silence. But fuck it.
The bicycle seems an unlikely symbol of women's liberation, but in 1894, when Andy Londonberry, carrying a pearl-handed revolver and a freaking revolver, really?
Yeah.
And a change of underwear.
Those are your two essentials, right there. Well done.